work on your own story? How would you testify to God's glory in your life? What are the significant events and the changes and the directions? Perhaps you might like to make room in your growth group to tell some stories to each other, because often we don't have that chance to really find out about someone. I know one group at least is already doing that. So again, I'd encourage you this morning to listen not only with interest about the person, but also just to hear resonances between your story and the person's story, to be able to gain some insight into something that maybe you haven't experienced, and to be looking to how God wants you to respond. Now this morning we have a treat. We are going to hear the story of Barry Humphreys. So I'm going to welcome Barry down here. And a couple of people who heard this have said to me, "Oh, Barry, I'd love to hear his story." So I hope we were all in that category this morning, Barry. Remember, it's quite a significant thing to be sharing your story like this. So come into the living room, Barry. It's better if you sit down. It's actually more relaxing, isn't it? So welcome, Barry.
Thank you.
And perhaps you could start. I know you're a long-time member of Unley Park, but some people may not know who you are at all.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps you could just tell us just a little bit about who you are to start with.
Okay, I'm married to Marg. So most people would know Marg. We have two married sons, Darren married to Kylie, and Brett married to Lauren, who's actually Steve and Marilyn Clark's daughter.
That's right.
Yeah. We have four fantastic grandchildren, Lucas and Oliver. Lucas is 10, Oliver's 6, and Grace and Sophie. Grace is 2.5, and Sophie's 5 months.
Sophie had a bit of a bumpy start to life, didn't she? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
She'd come home. Lauren was only in hospital a couple of days. She came home, wasn't well. She had to go back in, and they found that she had something affecting her that needed antibiotics, and she had a full dose of antibiotics and spent a week in hospital, and it's been okay since.
Yeah. Yeah, so a scary week, but she's doing really well.
When they're so young.
Praise God, So, Barry, tell us a little bit about your growing up years and your roots.
I was raised Catholic, which was from my mum's side of the family. My dad was Church of England, but he had stopped going as a teenager, so he didn't go to church at all. My mum, my younger sister and myself, we used to walk to church every Sunday morning, which was about a 20-minute walk each way. If it was raining, Dad might pick us up.
He might.
But otherwise, we would walk. And my sister and myself went to a Catholic primary school. My sister went on to Catholic high school. I didn't. I made a first communion in year three, which was pretty big back then. You couldn't take communion prior to making your first communion. So that was a pretty big deal in year three. And then when I was about 11 or 12, I was an altar boy.
What was that like?
Which is something you did within the Catholic Church. It was only for boys. A lot of boys did it. And I did that for 2 or 3 years. Yeah.
That was pretty special for your mum, wasn't it? She she liked
that. Her and her brother, that side of the family was all Catholic. So anything to do with Catholic was good for them.
So looking back on that, how much do you see the Catholic background bringing you towards God? Is that what effect did it have on you?
I don't know whether God had a big effect. It was more the fact that you were Catholic. And mum was Catholic, so you just did everything Catholic. It seemed a bit scary at times, because there seemed to be a lot of rules and regulations that you had to abide by, be at church, go to confession, There was Stations of the Cross. There was all these other things that they'd have that they'd expect you to attend to. So it was more just hearing about Catholic more than God, I think, at the time. Yeah.
What, as a little boy, how did you sort of picture God? Who did you think God might be?
I knew he was in heaven. I'd been taught that. But Catholics taught that to go to heaven, you had to be Catholic. There wasn't any other religion that would get you to heaven. And I'd accepted that. I didn't have any reason not to accept that. I guess if you're brought up Baptist, you think you should be, Baptist is fine. Being brought up Catholic, I thought Catholic was fine. There was no personal experience. It was just Mum was Catholic, we were Catholic. So that's how it ran. And if you wanted to go to heaven, you had to be Catholic. So, yeah.
So a fair bit of fear in that, in wanting to keep on the right side of the line?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was... the Catholics ran a... Not necessarily Catholics. Their teaching was their sins came in two stages. You could either have a venial sin or a mortal sin. And if you died with a mortal sin, you went to hell. So you didn't want that to happen. If you died with venial sin, you would go to purgatory, spend a bit of time there, and then nick up to heaven. So it was scary in respect, I think, the way they scared you into it, I think, yeah.
So a very different kind of picture of forgiveness.
Yeah.
Yeah, limited perhaps, yeah. So tell us what happened. You left school and went and did an apprenticeship, and what happened then?
Yeah, I took up an apprenticeship as a plumber after I left year 10. I'd finished my apprenticeship just at the end of it, so I was 20, 21. And my boss and his young family had started attending Edwardstown Baptist Church, and they had made a commitment. So he asked me along to, I think it was Harlem Globetrotters at the time. They were big around then.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. And he asked me along just to a social event, met other people there. They asked me along to a few other social events, and then eventually to a church service. And people were genuinely happy to see me and spoke to me and were quite welcoming, which was good. But all these people were going to church twice on a Sunday. They were going to social groups, they were going to young adults and Bible study. I thought, this is just too much, it's not for me. So I went along to church the odd time, but nothing. Just didn't pursue it in any way. Yeah, just went when I felt like it. So, yeah.
So when did that begin to change?
I think I just gradually worked into it. I think I'd just... There'll be social events I'll go to and then go to more church services, and I'd still pick and choose the ones I went to. I think it was just a natural progression that I moved along and went to more things involved in the church, yeah. I'd had an upbringing with the church, so I guess I was familiar with a church, so that probably helped a little bit, yeah.
And at this point, were you still practicing Catholic practices?
No, I'd stopped going to church.
Yeah.
Certainly by the time I was 18 or 20, so I wasn't going at all, no.
So, with this kind of sitting on the fence for a while, what happened to change that?
I certainly kept my non-church friends, which I think is good, but I was able to choose, I was choosing what I wouldn't do. I could always find plenty to do with my non-church friends, be it Saturday nights or Sundays or whatever. So I did that. But I had to keep, it was a balancing act. I had to keep, should I be at church? should I be at Bible study? Should I go out with my friends? That sort of, that was happening all the time. So I guess eventually I started to go to the church more and I became more regular. I started playing basketball at the church. And then I think it gradually just took over. I certainly still kept my non-church friends. I just did less with them than I was doing before. But yeah, the church.
So you got to a point where you decided you'd go and speak to the pastor? Tell us about what happened there.
I'd been going to Bible study reasonably regularly and going to church, and they often talked about commitment and having Jesus as part of your life and things like that. And there were probably other people in the Bible studies and so forth that were in that position as well. And I guess I'd been hearing it for a fair while. So I went and spoke. It was a Friday afternoon. I went and spoke to our pastor Ian. He lived in the manse next to the church. And I had a whole heap of reasons why my time could be taken up with other things and not make that commitment. But he spoke to me about it, and after the discussion, we just got down on our knees and prayed, and I made a commitment. Yeah, so it was sort of that easy, really, in the end.
And what happened straight after that? What was something you discovered?
When I got to church on the Sunday morning after the Friday, people came up and congratulated me and so forth. So Ian must have told people what had happened, but it worked out that a whole heap of people had been praying for me, which I didn't know about, and a lot of those people I was playing basketball with and other people, and so that was a big surprise to me. Yeah,
a few people even that we might know were praying for you.
Grant Hutchinson, I think a lot of you would have known Grant Hutchinson. Laurie Lucas used to be at the church as well, so he may have been involved, I'm not sure, but Bob Manning, so some of you would have known Bob, or John Manning, his son, so
what things changed in your life now that you'd made this commitment, and I guess I'm particularly interested in how did your picture of God change, because you must have met a different kind of God, a different kind of Jesus than you'd found as a child.
Yeah, I was certainly, the teaching was that he wasn't scary and he did want to be part of your life and he was there to love us and help us. And although you do have to do the right thing and act and work as a Christian life, some of those other things that the Catholics were teaching weren't necessary. You can do it. You didn't need to go to confession. You can do it yourself directly to God. Things like that. So a lot of that type of thing changed. Yeah.
So forgiveness is a lot more accessible, I guess?
Yeah. With the Catholics, the confession was at certain times that the confessionals would be open, and that's when you went to confession. So if you couldn't make those times, you had to wait till the next time. Yeah. Whereas with this life, it was whenever you wanted. Yeah.
The curtain of the tabernacle, remember that?
Mm.
Yeah. So, Barry, you got baptised shortly after that. Tell us about how that went.
Yeah. I'd been going to church probably about a year, been a Christian for about a year, going to Bible studies and so forth. And there was always talk that after you've made commitment, you should be baptised. So it was sort of spoken about a lot at our Bible studies, and we'd seen other people baptised at the church, so it wasn't uncommon for it to happen. And I just thought that I should do it. It doesn't make me anything special. I'm not a Marvel hero or anything like that. But it was thought it should be a public showing that I have changed and that I should be baptised. So I was baptised at Edwardstown in August 76, and to my surprise, I was going out with Marg at the time, and to my surprise, all her family rocked up, which I didn't know were coming, but she has two brothers, and so they all came along, which was great support. Yeah, so it was excellent.
Now, your Catholic upbringing had a lot to do with your mum.
Yes.
And you told me that a lot of what you did was out of loyalty to your mum.
Mm-hmm.
How did she feel about your newfound faith?
She was a little bit upset when I mentioned it to her. It wasn't a topic we discussed. She was very much into the... She was Catholic and she believed what they had told her. So she was very much into that. Her mum, my grandma, when she first met her Irish Catholic to be husband, she actually changed religions to become Catholic because she couldn't marry him if she wasn't Catholic. So mum had all that. So grandma had put that onto her. Mum's dad died when she was killed in a car accident when she was in primary school. So it was her mum that raised her. So she had what grandma was, or her mum was teaching her, then mum passed that on to me. So they believed that Catholic was the way, and that was it. In high school, we used to have religious instruction, and also we used to have people come in to speak at assemblies, because you could do a lot of that back in those days. And we had Christian people come in and speak, and they'd give out New Testaments, and I think it was the Gideons. And I'd read part of it and taken it home and showed mum, and you know, that went in the bin because it wasn't Catholic. So yeah, it was pretty strong. My dad didn't seem to worry too much, but it was pretty full on, I guess. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what do you love about Jesus? What do you see in Jesus that makes you want to follow him and love him?
I think the fact that he wants the best for us and he does love us. We don't always do the right thing, but we know that he's there for us, and we can always just go to him when we need him at any time. And obviously he has a sense of humour, the fact that I'm up here today, which is not something I would normally do, as you would know. But I think just that he's there for us all the time and wants the best for us. Yeah.
Now, we had Abby read a passage which was meaningful and important to you. Can you tell us a little bit more about that Chronicles passage?
Yeah, it was Chronicles 29:11. Everything in the heavens and on the earth is yours, O Lord, and this is your kingdom. Wealth and honour come from you alone, for you rule over everything. Power and might are in your hands and at your discretion. People are made great and given strength. Back in the early to mid-90s, I did a course, or Marg and I did a course called Crown Ministries. There was about six couples doing it, I suppose. And the basis of the course was that God gives and God takes away. So no matter what we have, whether it be a lot or little, God has given it to us, and we are able, so that we're able to handle what he's given us, what our abilities are, he's given it to us. And I think sometimes we look at people who have a lot more than others, and you think, why have they got all that and we've only got this? But I think this passage and that study tries to take that away and makes you happy for what you have, because God may have given someone else more, but they'll be judged differently as well on what they have. So it just takes that guilt away, I think, of saying, why don't they do more, or what are they doing? But yeah.
Because everything belongs to God.
That's right. Yeah. So.
So you met Marg,
mm-hmm.
and you got married. How did your relationship with Marg affect your relationship with God? Because she had a different background, didn't she?
Yeah, Marg comes from a Baptist background. So she was full on Christian as such. So all her family were Christian. I'd probably met Marg initially within the group when I first started going to church, but we went out a couple of times prior to me becoming a Christian. Marg and I had a lot of discussion over that. She didn't think that was the right thing to do because I wasn't a Christian. She believed that you should marry a Christian. So we went out a couple of times and that was sort of, we just remained friends and whatever in the group and so forth. But after I'd made a commitment, sometime after that, I asked Marg out again and it was different. The fact that I was now a Christian, God was working with both of us, and the fact that I was able to go out with her again, we saw God at work, and of course that eventually led to us being married in 1977. Yeah.
So how did you and Marg experience, did you have any difficult times, and how did your faith affect that?
Job-wise probably was some of the most difficult times. I seemed to go through some stages there where working for companies and so forth, and you'd be there for a few years and they'd either downsize or close up or whatever. And you always had to look for that next job. But it always seemed to be in God's timing that next job just turned up in time. You might have received holiday pay or something like that when you'd left the last job. And just as those things are getting to the end, the next job turns up. So it was really good. In actual fact, for the last 10 years of my life, because I retired back in December, I worked in maintenance in aged care, and just prior to getting that job, Marg was working in aged care as well, and she was talking to the maintenance man at her work that we knew, and she only worked part-time, so it was a day that she was able to talk to him, and he just happened to ask what I was up to, and she'd explained that the company I was working for had closed and I was looking for a job, and he said, "Oh, we've got maintenance jobs going. Like, you need to apply." Now, if that had been the week before, I probably would have had a job. A couple of days later, Marg wouldn't have been working. So, yeah. And it turned out that the gentleman that we had to put my application into, Marg knew, and she actually worked with his wife. So, yeah, it's just all that working together that it just happened at the right time. And got the job and was there for 10 years. Yeah.
Indeed, everything belongs to God, doesn't it?
That's right, yeah.
What about some joyful times? What do you get most joy out of?
A lot of joy out of my family. Having seen the boys grow up as Christians, become Christians, marry lovely Christian girls, and still go to church. They go to Both of them go to different churches. That's been really great. Then to see our grandchildren growing up and going to church. Lucas, the oldest one, went to the M&M camp last week. And actually, I think he's talking at church about it this morning. But he loved it, apparently. Yeah, and he's waiting to go next year. So, so that's really good to see that happen. And that brings a lot of joy, yeah.
So this question that I asked Emily as well, who are you in the process of becoming? Who would you like to become in the future?
I think I've always been relatively calm and easygoing, and I'd like that to continue. I think it's a lot easier now that I'm retired. I've got a lot more time. I can be as calm and as easygoing as I want to be.
That's how it works.
But with the grandchildren, I think that's really good. We have a lot to do with them, and we'd like to continue to have a lot to do with them over the time and see them grow. And I think you get a different perspective on your children as parents, because the things they're going through are the things we've been through, but they don't have the time that we now have because they're working. But just to have that time and be able to help out where you can and be available, yeah.
So you want to be the person that your grandchildren need?
That's right.
Would that be fair to say?
That's right, yeah. And we have, as I say, we have a lot to do with them, and we have great fun. So yeah, and I just want that to continue. Yeah, and I'm sure that will, you know, they love all their other grandparents as well. And yeah, I'm sure between us all, we'll contribute to that.
So, what would you like those of us who are believers to receive and hear from your story this morning?
I put down here friendship evangelism.
I'm not sure. Explain a little bit what you mean.
I guess it was through my boss's friendship that he led me to church and becoming a Christian, and then meeting Marg and going on from there. There was a gentleman at our church who had started working as an associate pastor, and that was Jock Crawford. Now, he was probably 25 years older than us. He was a truckie, bookmaker. His life was as far removed from a Christian church as it could be until he became a Christian. And he became an associate pastor. And we seemed to click. And we could go to him and speak to him about things. He would come to us and tell us his latest child. He had six children, which daughter was having a baby and who was getting married next and all the rest of it. So we really had that great relationship. And I think it's important to have someone that you can go to and speak to when you need to, because it works both ways. They can come to you, you can go to them, because there are times when you need to speak to someone other than maybe your wife or someone. Yeah, just that person you can speak to, yeah.
So just thinking about that boss of yours, his invitation to you to go to church has led to, so far, three generations of faithful followers of Jesus in your family.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that incredible when you think of little Lucas really comes out of that invitation?
That's
that,
right,
that person.
Yeah, yeah.
What a testament.
Yeah, well, Marg's side of the family are all Christians. All the cousins, there's a couple of pastors in there and so forth. And our two boys are the youngest cousins. So they always had older cousins to look up to. And I think that was very important too, to have those friends and those people that you can look up to just to help you along when needed. Yeah, no good for our boys, yeah.
And what would you say to someone who doesn't yet know Jesus? What would you like them to hear from your story?
I think for someone like me who had 20 years of Catholicism, can still be saved, still see the light and be saved, then meet Marg and get married and try and live a life that is faithful to God. We don't always succeed, but we do try. Yeah, so that, you know, that could be someone this morning, who knows?
It's worth it, you think?
Pardon?
It's worth it, you think?
I think so, yeah. It's been a good life, I can't complain. Yeah, but yeah, it's not perfect, but we try and it's been good, yeah.
Thank you so much, Barry.
Right.
As I listen to your story, I do hear a life of faithfulness. That decision you made right back when you were 20-something has seen you in good stead all the way through, and that you have sought to live the life that Jesus calls you to. It's so encouraging to see that faithfulness being passed down through the generations in your family. And it's also great to see how you have learned to trust God.
Yep.
In times that were not certain, that you knew that, given that everything belonged to Him, that you could trust Him with what you had. And you acted on that. You didn't just believe it, but you lived that out. And so that's so encouraging, isn't it, to us, to hear that. So I'd like to pray for you, and I'd also like to pray for you.